And we're joined now by Toronto lawyer Chris Black. Are you there, Chris?
Yes, hi. Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
Very good. I'm glad to be talking to you. We were just speaking to someone from Burundi. I want to remind our listeners, had a great, tremendous cases that you fought and succeeded with at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda. You're quite aware of all the issues that the Burundians are now confronting. I have a question for you that probably I didn't kind of give you a heads up for, but I know you're conversant with the issue. In Rwanda today, there are Burundian refugee camps, and there seems to be a consensus amongst international observers of these camps that the Rwandan authorities have been arming and training Burundians to send them back to commit crimes in Burundi. And indeed, that some of them are child soldiers, as General Dallaire likes to say.
Right.
And then the reaction of the Rwandan government, though, was very curious. That they said, first of all, they deny, but then they said, well, okay, we're offended that you say this. We're going to remove these refugees to other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that their prerogative to do such a thing?
No, because if they're really real refugees, then they have to abide by the Geneva Convention and give them aid and assistance. They can't just kick them out somewhere else. But it looks to me somewhat similar. It echoes what was happening in Rwanda between 1990 and 1994, when they don't say who these Rwandans are. Are they Hutus or are they Tutsis? Mm-hmm. We know that in 1994, the RPF was actively taking Tutsi young men, pushing them or attracting them to join their forces to fight against the government and training them in various places. They may be doing the same thing by taking some people out of Burundi and sending them back in to cause some trouble. That's maybe what's happening. I don't know if they're Hutus are being, well, they could be, but mm-hmm. not clear to me who they are.
Well, if Canada and others want to be helpful, that's the sort of thing they ought to all take note. And
exactly.
Wouldn't it be great, by the way, if instead of being a little NATO partner, we actually conducted our own investigative work, and members of parliament would go to these countries and tell Canadians what a Canadian observer thinks?
Right. There are a lot of Canadians, well, yourself among them, and I and other people feel part of. A lot of people know about what's going on there, but the government doesn't seem to ask us what we know and don't care by the looks of things.
Yes. This is Christopher Black. He's written an article, American Aggression Against China, which it's in New Eastern Outlook. It's journal-neo.org. This is published February 7th. Chris, this is in my opinion, it's a really important article. You call attention to a matter which is when people are, it's sort of happening, and you can see that it has dangerous aspects, and yet we're not being alerted by anybody. But U.S. warships traveled within the 12-mile limit of China's shoreline.
Right.
Now, what is that about, and what are the dangers involved?
Well, what was astonishing about that is that, well, the American pressure on China has been building for several years, as anybody who's been paying attention knows. And the Americans have penetrated, flown spy planes over China and sent ships into their waters to test them and provoke China before. But this one was astounding to me because they openly bragged that they had gone into the 12-mile limit. And then still claimed that they were abiding by international law and that the American Navy had the right to go anywhere they deemed it in their interest to go. And yet they were abiding by international law, yet the international law and the Law of the Sea Convention, which the Americans accept as international law, states that every country has a 12-mile limit banning military vessels from entering those waters unless there is permission from the host country. They can make innocent passage in a storm or going through some areas for a shortcut, but they still have to get permission. Commercial vessels can just do that. But the Americans sent in a guided missile frigate and didn't warn China or Vietnam, which also has a claim on those waters, but less than China. They openly said, we didn't bother to know, to tell any either of these countries that we were going to do this. We just had the right to do it, which means they don't recognize any national borders or territory boundaries or national sovereignty or anything else. And, of course, if they keep doing this, then China has to respond at some point. And the Americans are pushing things to a very, very dangerous level, because we see them pushing in Ukraine, we see them pushing in Syria. Now they're claiming today that Russia bombed a couple of hospitals, but people on the ground said they were American planes that bombed those hospitals, and there are medicants on frontier hospitals, mm-hmm. the same as the Americans bombed in Afghanistan. Don't think that may not be a coincidence. Mm-hmm. So they're pushing everywhere and provoking what looks like it could be a world war if they keep going the way they're going. Yeah.
They have this, you know, we have to really soberly look at it. They do, as you say, believe that they have right, I guess we used to call it God-given, mm-hmm. that the international law doesn't apply, and yet they're always talking about bringing to heel states they don't like and invoking international law.
And though the international law they invoke usually is, in these situations, is a doctrine they've invented, which is not known to international law, as right to protect or responsibility to protect, which people like Michael Ignatieff and other dubious people like that have invented and try and push on us as a reason we can violate international law because it's some sort of higher moral principle, which in fact is nothing but an imperialist device to justify war.
Yeah, a racial assumption that the West represents the highest level of civilization.
Exactly. It's the white man's burden over again.
Yes, and white man's crimes. You raise you've lately taken up an issue I wish, I think everybody ought to know about this. You have asked the Canadian government to start explaining itself of how it deploys troops into places like Iraq. Of course, we've talked some about Syria, also Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And you have reminded the Canadian government that there are sections of the NATO doctrine, or whatever the NATO's composition, has rules about when you can move forces. And could you explain what that's about?
Yeah, well, my complaint was, and I've had it since the Canada's participation in the aggression against Yugoslavia back in 1999, it came to my attention then that the National Defense Act, the Canadian National Defense Act, Article 31, which states that the government may deploy Canadian forces inside Canada or overseas, can only do so in limited conditions, and none of which apply in any of those circumstances. And the conditions have to be that the troops can be deployed for a UN operation, that is a peacekeeping operation, therefore like Dallaire's Rwandan peacekeeping mission was legal, although what they did there was illegal. Mm-hmm. Or it's subject to the NATO treaty, that is an attack by a state on NATO, and NATO decides to defend itself against that state, and Canada decides to participate. Or in when it's in defense of Canadian, self-defense for Canada. None of those conditions apply with respect to any of the military operations that Canada has been engaged in outside UN peacekeeping operations since 1999. Mm-hmm. So the Afghanistan mission, Iraq, Ukraine, Yugoslavia, Libya, were all illegal, not only under international law, because we have to emphasize they're also illegal under international law, but they're also illegal under Canadian law, as I read it. So I wrote to the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense, Minister of Foreign Affairs, saying, that seems to be my reading of the Act. Tell me I'm wrong. That was last week. I've received no answer. I've also raised it with a number of journalists over the years, many journalists, and I sent the letter to the Toronto Star editor and the Globe and Mail, but no response, no interest whatsoever. It seemed, and also various party leaders, the NDP, Liberals, Conservatives, nobody ever replies, nobody seems to care. And I think
somebody
I don't get a reply means that I'm right.
Yeah, somebody might write what you have to say to them in the ashes that are left around us after they blunder into something totally ignorant.
Right.
I want to tell people again, the title of the article is American Aggression Against China in the New Eastern Outlook, journal-neo.org. You point out and that the stakes are rather high. The ending of your article is chilling, I'd say. And it's because here you are, and if we apply this point to Turkey, Syria, et cetera, Turkey is a NATO state. And the last time a stunt was pulled by the Turkish government, the shooting down of a Russian aircraft, NATO convened a big meeting, and they said the reason we had to do that was because Russia had responded negatively or in an unfriendly way towards Turkey for having murdered, you know, shot down a plane, murdered one of the pilots.
Right.
And it was all like, well, of course, we are now in a collective defense mode. Why should Canadians permit this to go forward? Why doesn't, you know, your point is that we have to look at what is it our own doctrine says.
Right.
Were we attacked?
Because the NATO, even when NATO speaks now, that NATO can do this, NATO can do that. NATO is by its own, by the NATO treaty, which is very short, a defensive alliance. It's not. It cannot be used to go and be policemen around the world. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be a defensive alliance. If one's attacked, the group protects the one that's attacked. That's it. Mm-hmm. But now they're talking openly of behaving like the world's policemen and going to solve problems in their interest, their way, wherever they deem fit. In Ukraine, in Syria, now NATO is talking about getting involved in Syria. And of course, as you say, any Turkish incursion which they're now engaging in Syria is going to provoke a Russian-Syrian reaction. That's going to be then by the press called an attack on NATO. Well, hell breaks loose. And they're doing the same thing over in China. They've got the same thing going on in Ukraine. One can say, in fact, we're already in a sense in World War III.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with people, the Russians, saying we're in a new Cold War. I don't think we're in a new Cold War. I never accepted that term originally. I think we're in very hot wars.
Yeah, it was never cold.
No, it was never cold. Vietnam and
if blood is warm, it was warm.
Very warm. And it's very, like, I end my article maybe in a very dramatic way, but sometimes, like, I think most of us get the impression we're very alarmed at what's going on. It's almost overwhelming, the danger they're putting us in. They don't seem to care.
Yeah, Canada's kind of like the dead canary in the in the tunnel, because where are the members of parliament who get on their hind legs and say, our fellow NATO member, Turkey, seems to be acting in a belligerent way towards Syria. What are the implications for us of this behavior?
Well, I heard one of the ex-conservative foreign minister on CBC stating that Canada should play its role again in NATO, that is, play with the Americans and engage in these military adventures. He didn't mention the fact they're all illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems to be this attitude that among the Canadian elite that they want to be the auxiliaries to the United States Imperial Forces, and they want the crumbs that come from that, obviously. They don't care about what you and I think, or mm-hmm. that the Canadian people are paying their taxpayers' money to fund Canadian forces, which are essentially being used to fight American wars, because that's what our forces are being used for. And that our officer corps accepts this is beyond, I mean, it's astounding. They're supposed to be patriots, but we're just fighting for American interests, not our own.
Yeah, and by the way, if you know something, I bet you are confident that if Canadians were asked the very questions that you said, they would 80% would agree with you, because it's so evident. There is not a sense of sovereignty and responsibility for action.
No, none. Not since, not for maybe many, many, 30, 40 years, maybe even never. Maybe it was all an illusion in the first place, because we were involved in the Korean War. But, yeah, the thing is getting very, very dangerous. I don't expect an answer from the government. If I get one, I'll let you know what it is about that letter. But
you owe it to us. We're the ones asking. So if you get
I raised it with several peace groups. I thought maybe somebody, if I'm correct in reading that act the way If I'm not, somebody can tell me I'm not. But if I am, then a peace group could use that in the federal court to bring an action against the government to get an order compelling the government to obey the law, like we all have to.
Well, it'd be they do tend to at least see that you get a form letter and a thank you for writing. But
maybe in 6 months I might get a form letter. Yeah. It's all over.
Well, I recall something, and I'll just get your thoughts on in the last moments here, is that when the Libya thing was developing, it wasn't very pretty. And I recall that there was a little stirring in Parliament, and they said, well, you know, we need some answers because we said there's going to be a no-fly zone, but what about this bombing people? I don't remember voting for that, and we'd like to have a picture of what's going to happen. And the way they handled that was that they brought in a NATO spokesperson or authority for a quiet meeting to explain what was going on. My question at the time was, well, why doesn't Canada do its own investigation? You ask a NATO guy to come and tell you? Why isn't there a Canadian official who meets and tells you what we're doing?
Right, exactly. It shows that the democracy doesn't work here. The government, our elected government, does not investigate for us, by us and with us. Mm-hmm. To find out things, they go and ask the people who are acting against that interest for their advice and what they want to do, because they're actually in charge.
Yeah,
Washington's in charge in London, so
They did not trust a Canadian to even pass on the word to the satisfied parliamentarians who had asked.
Right, and the media is also part of this, because you don't get any. They cover the news in a very skewed way, and obviously. It's all in favor of all these wars, and one has to ask how that's actually done. And people talk about common interest, but there seems to be more to it than that, because the same stories appear in the same days and the same detail. Mm-hmm. But we're being misled by our own media and the people that work for the media. So, and we also remember the ICTR, the Rwanda War Crimes Tribunal. Many journalists were put on war crimes trials for doing less.
By the way, you did as much as anybody to bring out the reality of what was going on in the ICTR, which is carried over into the ICC, where now the heads of state of Africa agree with you that these are colonial courts.
And we have President Gbagbo finally on trial, but that's disappeared from the press. The trial started, but who knows what's going on that. But right. he's kept on ICE. That's nice. Doesn't matter how long the trial lasts, 4 or 5 years, he's kept on ice so he can't engage in politics on the Ivory Coast, him and Charles Le Goude. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the outcome is.
Yeah, exactly. You've marginalized him and the masses of people who supported him.
Right.
They can't speak because he's on trial.
Exactly. Yeah. And whether he's acquitted or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well,
he's out of the picture. That's what they do.
Indeed. We've been speaking to Christopher Black. The article is American Aggression Against China, New Eastern Outlook. And that's journal-neo.org. And Christopher, it's great to talk to you. And
you
we're going to be in touch with you because we want to hear what happens when the government answers you.
I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. This is the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM. In Toronto, and I want to thank our guests, and I want to thank Hani, and we will be with you next week.